Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question at that time, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the meeting over to Ms. Tish Hall. You may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Tish Hall, Project Officer with the Office of Adolescent Health, and on behalf of the Office of Adolescent Health and the Office of the Family and Youth Services Bureau, I would like to welcome you to today's webinar, which is presented on behalf of a contract sponsored by the Office of Adolescent Health and FSBE with JBS International. Today, we'll take the opportunity to listen to a webinar presented by Monica Rodriguez and Kurt Conklin from CECAS on program marketing from A to Generation Z. I hope that will be very informative and that you will have plenty of questions. Please hold all questions until the end. There will be a lot of interactive polls during the session, so please take advantage of those. And I will turn this over now to Monica.
Thanks so much, Tish. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. We'd like to take a moment to just give you some background on our work with adolescent sexual health promotion and sexuality education. Much of our work is based on what we know to be best practices in sexuality education and adolescent pregnancy prevention programs, including today's webinar. So we know that successful program marketing is informed actually by best practices in marketing, not including but not limited to those in social marketing. So we're happy to share some of that expertise with you today. I am Monica Rodriguez. I am trying to forward the slides. There we go. Okay. Sorry. I'm the president and CEO of CECAS, the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States. Whoops. And with me today is Kurt Conklin, who's our program director. And I have a feeling that either one or both of us have met many of you at some of the regional training and other clustered calls and webinars that we've done. A little bit about CECAS. CECAS is a 48-year-old private nonprofit national organization. We were founded in 1964. We have offices both in New York City, and which is our headquarters, which is where Kurt and I are today, melting in an unusual heat wave that we're having, and in Washington, D.C., where they're also melting in a heat wave, as I'm sure are many of you. CECAS's mission, essentially, is to affirm sexuality as a natural and healthy part of living. And we do that in three main ways. We do that by educating, primarily by assisting schools and community-based organizations in how to do good sexuality education. We do advocacy work, so making sure that the policy environment is supportive so that good teen pregnancy prevention, HIV prevention, and sex ed can happen. And we also inform with educational resources, one of which is on the left-hand side of that slide. We recently collaborated with two colleague organizations, actually with several colleague organizations, but primarily Advocates for Youth and ANSWER, on national sexuality education standards, which are specifically geared toward public schools, talking about the core content and skills, the minimum essential core content and skills necessary for sexuality education. There's a hyperlink to that resource in the slide set. I know you all receive electronic version of the slides. And so for those of you who are interested, there's a link to the standards there. So that's a little bit about us and about CECAS, and we want to find out a little bit about you. So in a minute, we're going to do a poll. We want to find out who's participating today, and what we would like for you to do is to respond with the title that best describes your role, your primary professional role at your organization. So if you are a trainer, select that one. If you are a community educator or primarily a counselor, primarily a clinician, primarily an administrator or program manager or program director, or if your title doesn't exactly fit in one of those others, then hit other. So it looks like most people have voted. If we could see the results. And there are the results. So it looks like we have about 25% of the participants are facilitators, 6% trainers, 37% administrators, and 31% play some other primary role at your organization. Well, welcome to you all. I hope that all of you can find this webinar helpful and get something useful out of it in your thinking about your specific role. So I want to go through today's objectives for our webinar. Oops, sorry about that. So by the end of this webinar, our goals are for you to be able to define program marketing in an adolescent health promotion context, to identify stakeholder groups to whom your program can be marketed, to think about and list some marketing activities that could be used to promote your program, and explain how a marketing plan, a program marketing plan, can advance the mission of your program. Now, one of the things that's a little bit different about today's webinar than I know the ones that we have usually done, and different than some of the webinars that I have participated in, is that we have a journal for your webinar that we're going to be referring you to throughout the course of the next hour. So there are going to be a couple of times during the webinar that we are going to ask you to actually complete your journal, to write your responses in the journal. That you can do that. Some of you, I am guessing, have probably printed out your journals and you can write by hand in them. It was also designed to be completed electronically, so you can maybe flip to it when we refer you to it. But we wanted to do this journal because we really wanted you to think about how the content of this webinar applies to you, and you saw that reflected in some of the webinar objectives, and to really come away with an action set or an action plan that can really help you think about and follow through on your next steps for program marketing. We would encourage you to share both the webinar content and the journal with your coworkers, especially those who aren't attending but who work with you on the project, so that you can think this through as a team. And when you need to document how you're using your Office of Adolescent Health program dollars, whether that's internally to your agency, or outside, this journal can help you show what happens on the planning side. You're not just making this stuff up. You actually think it through. Oops. So, again, writing in the journal will help you keep track of your ideas, apply it to your actual work, share it with colleagues who aren't attending, document your activities, and guide your next steps. As far as today's agenda, I want to go through that very quickly. We're going to have a section that I'm going to hand off to Kurt in just a minute on what is program marketing, what are you marketing and to whom, then a section on segmenting, then targeting, then tailoring your marketing efforts, a piece on your marketing plan, insights from the field, which is a section where we'll give you some examples of how some colleagues from around the country are doing program marketing for their program. Talk about some additional resources because there's a ton of literature and only so much that we can cover in the webinar. And then finally, questions and answers and wrap up. So with that, I'm going to hand things over to Kurt.
Hi, folks. Thanks for joining us today. Kurt Conklin here, the program director with CECAS. And just very recently, I had the pleasure of meeting some of you, I believe, in Minneapolis at the regional training, which will be done again in Philadelphia in the coming week. So I'm looking forward, hopefully, to meeting some of you in person there. So we're looking now at a slide that says, what is program marketing? I hear folks in our field use it a lot, but when you begin asking them what it really is, you sometimes get some different responses. You see in front of you now a slide of a rather famous person in the field of business marketing, and we can take some of our cues from business marketing to talk about health promotion program marketing. So I guess what I want to stress here is marketing in the context of our webinar today is not simply raising awareness that you have a program available for teens, because you do. Those are your interventions. But marketing is also about developing relationships with many different stakeholders, so not just your adolescent learners. In the for-profit world, we call stakeholders customers and investors. And Peter Drucker, who you see here in the photograph, was legendary as a strategist for making for-profit businesses more effective, and we think he's worth knowing about in the nonprofit human services sector as well. There are many ways to define program marketing, and we want you to think hard about three basic dimensions of marketing: advertising, which is providing information, and then motivating, which is shaping attitudes, and then engaging people, which is really interacting. And now I'd like to ask you to please take a moment to write in your journal or type in your journal if you're doing it electronically. You should see a question which is asking you, which one of these four stakeholder groups does your agency market to most effectively? So this is really just for you to journal in your opinion. When you think of the ways that your agency might do some of its marketing, who is it reaching most effectively and why? And in your opinion, which of these groups does your agency market to least effectively, and why? And if you don't know or you're not sure, this is an excellent moment to think about, why aren't you sure? Is there something about your own agency that maybe you need to find out after this webinar so that you could answer these questions more effectively? I'm just going to pause silently for the next 20 seconds to allow you to continue to jot down or type in your thoughts. Then we'll proceed.
Hey, Kurt.
Yes.
I've had a few people say they're having a hard time hearing you. Can you speak a little louder into the phone?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sure. So I'm going to move forward now, if you're continuing to write in your journals, that's fine. Just jot down ideas as you need them. It's really for your own benefit to refer back to. So some of you in your training to work in the health professions have probably encountered the concept of social marketing, or maybe have attended professional development sessions on social marketing. I want to read you a little quote about what it means from a source that you see on the left of your screen. So we're listing a source here that we think is actually a good reference manual for social marketing, and here's how they define it. Social marketing is the utilization of marketing theories and techniques to influence behavior in order to achieve a social goal. So in other words, social marketing is similar to commercial marketing, except that the goal is not just to maximize profits or sales. The goal is a change in behavior that will benefit society overall. So and the example they use is persuading more people to use efficient lighting. So if we can persuade people to change the lighting that they buy when they're in the supermarket, there may be an energy savings that benefits society. And to them, the marketing that encourages people to do that is social marketing. And that's from the publication issued by the Academy for Educational Development. Now, there's a theory behind all this, right? We love theory because although what we do in our interventions is evidence-based, before the evidence-based intervention was designed, there had to be a theory behind it. And so what I'm going to talk briefly about is exchange theory. This is often cited as the basis for social marketing and other marketing approaches in general health promotion. So what is it? The key thing to understand is that cost is not just something measured in money. We put an image on the screen of the smartphone to make our point, because how did we ever get to the point where carrying around an expensive phone is now widely viewed as a necessity and not just a luxury? So for a lot of people, the cost of the monthly phone bill is outweighed by the other benefits that they get from having the phone. So let's think for a moment. What are some costs that your stakeholders have that they have to think about when deciding whether they're going to participate in your teen pregnancy prevention intervention or otherwise support that intervention? So again, your stakeholders aren't just your adolescents. There are lots of different kinds of people who support what you do and support your intervention. What do your stakeholders have to think about in order to decide that they're going to support or participate in your intervention? Now please take a moment, go back to your journal, and there should be a place now where you can list at least one of your stakeholders and list at least one of the costs of supporting or participating in your program from their perspective. So I'm just going to pause for 20 seconds and let you do some jotting, and then we'll come back. So your program participants and program stakeholders often have to calculate other costs when deciding to attend or support your program, and those costs could include the time and effort required to participate, the activities or the relationships they will have to set aside temporarily when they devote time to your program, the judgment of peers or colleagues regarding their participation in your program or their support of it. And then if they perceive that the cost is too high, they're not going to respond to your outreach. There are what they call the famous four P's of social marketing, and the famous four P's need to account for at least one additional P. So you can see on the screen what are the four P's: product, place, price, and promotion. And there's a fifth one. That your partner agencies or other stakeholders who are not employed by your agency yet play a big role in how your program is going to be attended and supported. So for starters, let's pause and go back to the journal. There's a question where you can jot down some responses, which is, have you had conversations with your partner agencies to ensure that you're on the same page about what your product really is? So your intervention, your product is a teen pregnancy prevention program, but the way you market it to people may be more that it's an exciting personal and social growth experience for teens. So anyway, if you've had conversations about this with your partner agencies so that you're on the same page about what that product is and where it can be marketed, that's one thing to jot down in your journal. The other thing to jot in your journal is, do your partner agencies, if you've got partner agencies, agree with you as to the perceived cost? What's the price of doing this? And then what is the cost to them to serve as your partners based on their perception? And finally, how well are partner agencies helping you to promote the program? So if you partner with an education agency like a local school district to reach adolescents who you'd like to participate in your teen pregnancy prevention initiative, then are your partner agencies really helping you promote the program? And do you agree on what the price is, the cost, and what you're doing to market it? The citation you see to the right for Stephen Gray's article on healthcare marketing actually identifies another fifth P, and that's what his is principles. So if your agency or your program participants or your stakeholders have a certain set of values to uphold, it's important to be sure that your teen pregnancy prevention program reflects those values and that you communicate this explicitly. So let's consider the product you're trying to market and think about the various segments in your communities who might play a role in participating in it or supporting it. We're going to look at two examples to illustrate our point. One is an example we've mentioned in past webinars because it's very powerful, and that's tobacco control programs, which involve youth at every level, not just as recipients of tobacco use prevention education. And our second example will be primary care services in a medically underserved community. So let's use these examples to help us think about program marketing as it applies to teen pregnancy prevention programs. Remember our earlier question, what is your product? A teen pregnancy prevention program or an exciting personal and social growth experience for teens? CDC has published a user guide for building effective tobacco control programs, and a major theme of effective programs is youth engagement. So from the public health perspective, the product is tobacco control programs, but from the youth perspective, the product you're selling is social interaction and leadership building opportunities. So effective programs are marketing themselves to funders and legislators using the language of public health, but they're achieving their participation goals using the language of youth engagement. A research team conducted a household health survey in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and this is our second example. And the research team conducted their household health survey to document the need for more primary health care services in the Wilkes-Barre area. They got over 4,000 responses after they sent surveys to 17,000 households in the city. From the household perspective, the product under consideration was primary care services. But from the funder and policymaker perspective, the product was data that provides a rationale for creating a city health department. So here again, an effective effort to increase primary care began not with marketing primary care, but rather with marketing survey data to funders and policymakers using the language of public health. So advocates for more primary care in Wilkes-Barre also continued to market this product, which is the data, for future sustainability. So I'm just going to pause for a moment, turn it over to Monica, who's going to walk us through some of the steps to segment, target, and tailor programs.
Thanks so much, Kurt. So in thinking about your programs, I want you to think a little bit about what are some of the products that have to do with your program. And as you think about those, it's important to think about how each of those products is going to appeal to a different constituency. So for most of us, the activities, or for most of you, the activities that you provide are intended to appeal to your adolescent participants or your youth participants. But the impact of your programs are actually also likely to appeal perhaps to funders, to legislators, to parents, and to other stakeholders. Perhaps the services you provide also appeal to potential partner agencies, for example. So if you provide after-school activities, the local public schools or local law enforcement agencies or other community-based organizations might see those as benefiting them as well. So one of the steps to effective program marketing is identifying the different audiences who benefit from your program, and that's called segmentation. Once you know your audience segments, then you can decide what products you can offer to each, and you can prioritize which segments to reach out to. It's not always possible or realistic to reach out to every potential audience that the program could appeal to, and this is called targeting. Each audience segment or each target population has its own norms and language and expectations and values. So the sales pitch, quote, that you would make to each requires an outreach method that reflects those differences. What's the hook to that audience? What's the appeal? And that's called tailoring the message. So to give you some examples of this, I want to walk you through some examples from CECAS's own experience in segmenting, targeting, and tailoring our marketing efforts and messages. So CECAS has provided training and technical assistance to education and health agencies in all 50 states and hundreds of local communities. We've done it internationally as well and with most of the territories of the United States. And to be effective, we've had to identify our audience segments and then market our services based on their values and expectations. I can tell you that folks in Guam, for example, where we've done some work, the appeal to them and what they respond to is really different than in mainland United States. When we market, we have to tailor the message to those unique qualities of each market segment. So think about a pizza whose slices have to satisfy several different tastes. And the, Kurt doesn't know this, but the pizza on that screen reminds me of a pizza that we were eating on Saturday. And I had my nephew and my niece, my son, and a couple of other family members, and the poor guy at the pizza place literally had to make each slice different because one wanted pepperoni and one didn't want any basil on it and one wanted sausage and my niece loves mushrooms and don't call her a weirdo for being a little kid who likes mushrooms. So it's really important to segment and target and tailor so that each slice of the pie is appealing to the target audience. So for CECAS, some of our target audiences for our work have been, for example, State Department of Education HIV prevention coordinators. So that's a very specific person. Who many of you know who that person is in your State Department of Education, who's in charge of HIV prevention education. We've also had projects where parents have been our primary audience, and other projects where young people themselves have been our primary audience. For each of those audiences, there are other people who would benefit or find the project appealing, but these are the audiences that we needed to market to. So, for example, so take a minute now to write in your journal what are at least three target audiences for your federally funded intervention. And I'm going to pause for a few seconds to give you some time to fill that out. Okay, so I'm going to give you an example from our work. So I mentioned that one of our target audiences are State Departments of Education, and specifically the segment in there is the HIV Prevention Coordinator. So CECAS was funded for many, many years by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's Division of Adolescent and School Health, or CDC-DASH. And often the activities that we did under that cooperative agreement were to work with school district-level health and PE teachers who taught sexuality topics related to HIV prevention. We often convened them at the request of the state-level and sometimes the local district-level HIV prevention coordinators, who also happened to be funded by CDC-DASH to do some of that work. So on this slide, you're looking at some of the state seals from states that we've worked in and departments of ed that we've worked with, like the New Mexico Public Education Department, the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction, and the Mississippi Department of Education, the District of Columbia Public Schools, for example, among many others. And as you can see, we've done the exercise of thinking about product, place, price, and promotion. So part of what we were marketing to them was capacity building assistance. And typically where we marketed that was at the state capitol, because we were really working with the State Department of Education. The price, so the perceived cost, was often about time. There's not enough time in the school day. There's not enough time in my role, in my job. I have all these other things to do. Travel costs to go to a training or to do in-person meetings. And local school district support. So my local school district is extremely supportive. My local school district is not so supportive. They're kind of supportive, but I have to pay for a substitute teacher to get a day to go to a training. So not just any monetary costs associated with that, but other things as well. And so for us, part of what, depending on the specific situation, but promotions that we did to address those cost concerns were fiscal incentives sometimes, professional development credits, and that's where partnering with the State Department of Education, for example, was really helpful. Advertising and promoting these events on school health listservs and having some of these conversations on school health listservs. So that gives you a sense of how we segmented, targeted, and tailored the marketing efforts for this particular activity within this particular project. What I'd like for you to do now is take a moment to write in your journal, and looking at the three target audiences that you just listed a little while ago, what is the product that you're offering each of them through your federally funded intervention? I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to fill that out. Okay. I'll give you another example of some of our efforts to segment, target, and tailor. So I talked a little bit about our work to target parents, and specifically to engage parents in talking with their children about sexuality. So years ago, CECAS did a campaign and a radio series. We started a campaign called Families Are Talking, and part of it was a radio series called Take a Minute to Talk About Sexuality with Your Kids. And this campaign used public service announcements and radio spots to encourage parents and give parents some examples of how they could talk with their children. And then we also published newsletters in both English and Spanish to motivate parents to increase the frequency with which they initiated conversations with their kids about sexuality issues. So one of the taglines of our campaign was talk soon, talk often, and talk again. So as you can see on here, going through the four P's, the product was the Take a Minute spots, the radio spots, as well as the newsletter campaigns. The place where we marketed them was on radio stations. We actually bought drive time airtime to play the spots, so it would reach people in their cars, at home. We also distributed the newsletters so that parents could read them. We distributed them both electronically and print versions so parents could read them at their leisure in their home or wherever it was convenient. Part of the price or the perceived cost was really around personal motivation. For some parents, the cost was actually kind of a benefit, which was connecting with their children and making sure that they were able to communicate their values with their children and make sure that they had information that their children had information to protect themselves and to lead happy and healthy lives. For some other parents, this was quite a nerve-wracking. let's be realistic here. We're talking about sexuality, right? So for some parents, they were terrified of talking with their children, or how am I going to do this, or I don't know what I want to say to my child. So sometimes the price was perceived as a benefit. Sometimes the price was perceived as an obstacle. And the promotion were the radio spots, which we also made available online. So the internet wasn't quite as popular when we did this as it is now. We also did other marketing things, like have pens with the website name and tote bags that we gave out at community meetings that were filled with the issues of the newsletter and pens. We had Post-it notes and magnets, some picture frame magnets with the Families Are Talking logo and the tagline of talk soon, talk often, and talk again. What you're seeing on this slide is also a postcard that we had that we would distribute with 10 quick tips on talking with kids about sexuality. And we specifically marketed that during October, which is National Family Sexuality Education Month. So looking at the products that your intervention offers to each of your target audiences, what is the place for each of these products? In other words, where are your target audiences most likely going to encounter the products that your intervention offers them? So please answer that question in your journals. And I'll give you one final example of some of our efforts. So each year, we co-sponsor with some colleague organizations, including, again, Advocates for Youth and the Feminist Majority and the Sierra Club, something called the One Voice Summit, which is a two-day training and policymaker education day for youth advocates who are interested in environmental and reproductive issues both in the United States and around the world. And so this is marketed towards young people ages 16 to 24. They come to Washington, D.C., for 2 days and meet young people literally from all around the world, mostly from the United States, but we have people coming from around the world as well, to really think about issues of environmental and reproductive justice, how those two issues are connected, and these are issues that these young people care deeply about, so how to move them forward. So to get young people, so the product is the One Voice Summit. The place, as I said, is in Washington, D.C. The price for many of them is about time. It's about travel. As you can imagine, especially with young people under the age of 18, getting parental and school support, parental consent is sometimes an insurmountable, not so much the parental consent, but just coordinating all of that. So there can be some pretty steep prices to it, or some costs to pulling this off. And then the promotion is part of what we do is have a contest where we do an essay contest where young people compete for free travel and lodging. So they basically are competing for scholarships to the conference so that their costs are fully underwritten. Part of the appeal of the summit is also the chance to network. It's a social opportunity that can't be looked in the marketing effort. And for many of these young people, they often feel like they're the only ones who are doing this work in their community. So this is a great way for them to physically connect in person with people who are doing, who think like they do or who care about the same issues that they do and are doing similar kinds of work. Our partners on this project, as I said, have been other national organizations such as Advocates for Youth and the Sierra Club, the Feminist Majority Foundation, who have shared the cost of the summit as well as the work of publicizing and recruiting young people. So even though some of those perceived costs and logistical considerations are pretty intense, we've been able to work with other organizations who see this as a benefit to them as well to overcome some of them. So I'd like for you to take a minute and go to your journals and answer the following question. Looking at the products that your intervention offers to each of your target audiences and the places those products can be encountered, what is the price that the target audience must consider for each of those products? So just to recap, I want us to take a quick look at the four P's and then take the final step. So going back, and you might want to refer back to your journal and fill in anything that you didn't get to. What is your product? For example, a teen pregnancy prevention program. Or is it an exciting personal and social growth experience for teens? There's one way to market it, and there's another way to market it. The second P, in what places are you marketing this product to teens, to funders, to policymakers, or to other community partner agencies? The third P, what are the perceived costs of attending your program for participants? What are the perceived costs of supporting it for some of those agency or some of those potential partners? Are the costs with funds, with legislation, with partnership agreements? And finally, what promotions address those cost concerns? So once again, I'm going to refer you to your journals and ask you to answer the question looking at the products that your intervention offers to each of your target audiences, the places those products can be encountered, and the price that the target audience must consider for each of these products. So putting the first three P's together, what is a promotion that you already are doing or could do to address those cost concerns? So by sketching out some of your own target audiences and the ways that you market to them, you are right now engaging in the process of developing a marketing plan. I am going to turn things over to Kurt, who's going to walk you through some of that.
Thanks, Monica. So teen pregnancy prevention programs can only market themselves to the extent that they have a marketing plan to refer back to. You can't really just do it on the fly. If your program does not have a marketing plan, it's time to have a conversation with your colleagues about creating one. So now we're going to do a little poll, and what we want to see is how many participants today can say that before today, their intervention or their teen pregnancy prevention program already had a hard copy marketing plan with specific action steps, timelines, and people responsible for tasks. So we're going to just let you poll, and we're going to find out what people think. Okay, the numbers are adding up, and as it looks like a few more are adding in their responses. But this is very revealing. So if what I'm seeing now, assuming that everyone is pretty much polled in, the results are that about a little more than half of you actually said no. You, to your knowledge, the teenage pregnancy prevention program that you're responsible for did not already have a hard copy marketing plan. And slightly less than half of you said yes, with about 6% of you saying not sure. So that's great to know, and that's helpful for all of us. So we've got our results, and to our next step. So effective marketing requires a plan, right? And an effective plan requires a team. It doesn't write itself. It needs people to write it. And if you're the sole person at your agency responsible for marketing your teen pregnancy prevention program, it's time to get help. So if your organizational culture can support teamwork, it's time to think about creating what some marketing program experts call a cross-functional team. So that's the phrase they use, a cross-functional team. This is simply a committee or a task force of your coworkers from various departments in your agency who can put their heads together with yours. So please take a moment now to go back to your journal, and the question I'd like you to jot down some responses to is which specific people at your organization would be ideal to have on a cross-functional team to market your intervention to youth, to community partners, to funders, and to policymakers? So dream away. Who should be on that committee, that cross-functional team? I'm going to just take pause for 15 seconds, and we'll go to the next slide. So there are numerous activities that can be part of a marketing plan. There are just a few ideas on the screen here in blue. I hope you can see this adequately. The type isn't huge, but the source for this, I just want to let you know, and we've listed it in our resources at the end of the slide, is a book called Social Marketing Behavior, a Practical Resource Guide for Social Change Professionals. That's the Academy for Educational Development Program publication that I referred to earlier. So let's go to the journals, and here's another opportunity for you to jot some ideas down. Looking at the marketing activities on this screen as examples, can you please at least one that you do not have a lot of experience with? As I look at the screen, I'm seeing a variety of examples, but the activities can include everything from a counseling hotline to panel discussions on the topic of teen pregnancy prevention to live theater, street outreach, free distribution of materials or price supports, which would be incentives or subsidies to help people meet the actual monetary costs of participating. If you look at the other column, There are things like endorsements or testimonials from opinion leaders in your community to endorse your program. And, of course, one of the more standard ones, print materials such as pamphlets and instruction sheets. I'm just reading at random off the list. But just find that one that you really don't have a lot of experience with and make a note of it. Consider taking this example to someone in your organization who might know something about that activity and try asking them about the pros and the cons of doing that activity to market your program. If you can't find anyone at your agency who might know about this activity, then think about someone who works with a community partner who might have that expertise if you don't have it at your agency. An excellent resource that gives models for how to market programs is Philip Kotler's and Nancy Lee's book, which is called Marketing in the Public Sector. Your plan for marketing should state in plain language exactly what your marketing goals and objectives are, who you intend to reach, and how those four P's would look in the context of your agency. So the plan also explains how you will know your marketing is successful. So in other words, what measures will you use to evaluate how successful your marketing efforts are? Again, on the slide is simply a sample example. The type is tiny. You're not going to be able to absorb it all now, but the slides will be available to you in the future, and we cited the book because that's where you can get that specific information in much greater detail. So now that we've explored some of your potential marketing activities, we want to share some wisdom from other colleagues in the field. What is everyone else doing out there? CECAS approached three experts in youth-serving agencies to gather some examples of the effective program marketing they're doing based on their experience. So our first example comes from a colleague named Todd Slosky. He's Director of Marketing and Administration at Answer, based at Rutgers University in New Jersey. And Answer publishes the teen news magazine Sex Etc., and provides web-based sexual health courses for professionals. And here's what Todd says. He says that reach, the number of people exposed to your message, is important, but that exposures, or the number of times professionals need to see that message before they take action, is even more important. So from experience, Todd has found that professionals and adults usually need three or more exposures to your message if they aren't actively seeking what you're promoting. Our next example comes from a colleague of ours named Mark Fernandez at Multnomah County Youth Commission in Portland, Oregon. And one of their key marketing strategies is to use messages developed by adolescents themselves. So the Youth Commission provides activities and services to youth in Portland and beyond, and it does this to recruit new participants into the commission and ensure that youth know about the programs and enroll in them, and that adults apply the principles of positive youth development and ask teens to contribute to the marketing process. So Mark says that his guiding principles are to use positive youth development and youth-adult partnership theory to develop youth-driven policy change from a social justice and racial equality lens. So you see the way they do their recruitment, engagement, and retention involving youth in their marketing. That's the key ingredient for the Multnomah County Youth Commission. Our third and final example comes from a colleague in the field named John Baronic, and he's the organizer of the Straightforward Youth Group in South Dakota. And this effort's part of a larger campaign there called Don't Tell My Parents. But the whole point of his program is actually to promote parent and child communication about risk behaviors. So John's example of a program marketing strategy resembles the one we just saw from Multnomah County Youth Commission. He says, let the teens lead and get out of their way. But here's John's unique angle. Because his program focuses on dynamics between parents and children rather than on policy change, his teen-driven marketing makes sure that parents hear directly from the teens. Teens themselves are not just crafting the marketing messages, they are also delivering the content themselves after being trained to know how the local news and entertainment media work. So we've barely scratched the surface in terms of exploring program marketing strategies with you, but therefore we want to call attention to some great resources that you and your colleagues can use in the days to come. And I'm going to turn this over to Monica now to follow up with this.
Thanks, Kurt. So during the webinar, we referred to several resources that we think are really helpful in helping with program marketing efforts. And so these are some of them. Some were developed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one specifically on teen pregnancy and social media, Gateway another on a gateway to health communication and social marketing practice, both of which are available online. There's a journal called Health Marketing Quarterly, which has great both academic and theoretical as well as practical articles on marketing specifically around health issues. There's another journal called Cases in Public Health Communication and Marketing, which gives great examples. And the California Department of Health, and specifically their STD and HIV Prevention Training Center, also developed a toolbox on social marketing that it is available for free online that can be another great resource. So these are just a handful of publications and websites that will provide you with additional program marketing assistance. They can give you much more detail than we've been able to do in this brief hour, and we're almost out of time. We've also been lucky that Todd and Mark and John, who are the program staff at the three programs that Kurt just walked you through with some of their examples, have also agreed to be resources. And we've listed their contact information and their phone number. They're standing by waiting for your call. Probably not really, but they won't be shocked when you call. We did clear it with them to make sure we could give out their information. So if one of those approaches was appealing to you or seemed like something that maybe you could do or would like to learn more about, please feel free to reach out to Todd or Mark or John. They're happy to talk with you talk with you about them, and this is how you can reach them. So with that, I am going to open things up to questions. Are there any questions or concerns or insights that you want to share with us today?
Monica, I had one question. This is Melissa. I had one question come up in a chat that I was having with one of the grantees. They wanted to know about the posters that you guys made for your campaign, if those were available.
I'm assuming that the one for parents?
Yes.
They are. We have, as I said, electronic versions of the postcard as well as the newsletters. We actually also did some public service announcements with a marketing agency in both English and Spanish that are available. So if anyone is interested in those, they're not so easy to find on our website because we're in the process of repackaging some of them, but we're happy to share them. So just contact me or Kurt, and we can make them available to you.
If you'd like to ask a question on the phone, please dial *1 at this time and record your name clearly when prompted.
Okay. Melissa, any other written questions?
Another one I have is, I just got this one in. Do you have any additional social marketing resources for teen pregnancy prevention for high school youth?
The only one I can think of that's specific to teen pregnancy prevention is that one from CDC, which targets adolescents, including high school-aged youth. I can't think of any resources that are specific to teen pregnancy prevention, though there are tons of social marketing resources that are specific to health marketing, not necessarily specific to teen pregnancy prevention. Kurt, can you think of
No, but I would just chime in. If you haven't already done this, you might want to reach out to the National Campaign for Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy because they also, just as we do, they have their own marketing strategies and materials, and it might be just interesting to see what the National Campaign has been doing lately. So you may get some inspiration from that as well.
We do have a few questions over the phone. Our first one's from Lucy. Your line is open.
Yes. Did you get a copy of the PowerPoint?
Yes, you will.
This is Melissa again from JBS. The slides will be available on the TPP grantee exchange next week.
Did you hear how Melissa just marketed the grantee exchange? Because we really want you to sign up for that. It's a valuable resource.
How do we sign up?
If you email me directly, I will guide you.
Your email, please?
mselevaag, S-E-L-L-E-V-A-A-G, at jbsinternational.com. You can also go to tppgranteeexchange.com. Is it .com or .org? Before I lie. And you can sign up. It's .org, tppgranteeexchange.org, and then just click the button to sign up, and you can sign up that way as well.
Thank you.
Sure.
And it's not just an exchange. It's an exciting social and professional development opportunity. Trust me.
Other questions?
Our next question comes from Amber. Your line is open.
Hello. I was wondering, since I know that we're going to get a copy of the PowerPoint, I was wondering if we could maybe get a magnified version of some of the slides. I think there were some good pointers, but just with smaller text, and they may have been screenshots, and I just wanted to know if maybe we could get those as a separate document.
Hi, Kurt here. Yes, we will be happy to supply that to you. So I'll work with Melissa to make that available on the Grantee Exchange, and then people can access it that way in bigger type.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question on the phone, please dial *1 and record your name when prompted. We have no further questions on the phone.
Okay. Well, then let's move on. I want to just wrap things up. We hope you're feeling reassured that program marketing is absolutely doable and much easier when you have a team and a plan. You don't have to do it by yourself. By sharing what we've covered today with your colleagues, you can ensure that your intervention will have the maximum possible level of impact with your participants, with your community partners, your funders, and your local and state policymakers, whose support you want for your program. We want these programs to continue. So please use your journal responses to plan what you will do with your what you will do next with your colleagues and all those stakeholders that we've considered over the past hour. And to just recap, here's a slide on making the sale to all of your stakeholders. These are the key elements we want you to remember when assessing how well your agency is marketing the program to address adolescent pregnancy. We're showing you a photo from a literal market because the appeal of the products is obvious. The placement is the promotion. And we happen to like the colors, and I'm sure we could all list which of our favorite candies or which of the candies is our favorite. So, again, this slide is to sum things up with the essential elements. I want to close with a quote. Please look at this quote and think about what it means in terms of marketing programs to address adolescent pregnancy. Your program is now part of your agency's, quote, brand, and your success determines your agency's reputation among teens, parents, community partners, and policymakers. So a brand for a company is like a reputation for a person. You earn reputation by trying to do hard things well. And that's certainly much of the work that all of you are doing. Again, we invite your questions as we move forward. Here is our contact information. So if you have other questions or comments on the webinar or for us, please contact us. And again, the slides and other materials, lots of other materials, are available on the Grantee Exchange. So we strongly encourage you to sign up for that.
Monica, I had one last question come across electronically.
Oh, okay.
It may be a question more for OAH, but I'm just going to put this out there. Somebody asked, does marketing to policy people constitute lobbying?
I'm going to take a stab at that. An example of marketing to policymakers is simply documenting your success stories and the impact and effectiveness of your programs. And that, to me, is not about saying a piece of legislation is coming up and we're asking you to vote yay or nay on it. So I think that sometimes it's a fine line. This is an issue that we all revisit time and again. But if you don't toot your own horn and let policymakers know about the effect of the legislation that they've passed or the funds they've authorized, they'll never know about the success stories and the impact and the needs that you're addressing. So from my perspective, program marketing to your policymakers is really about letting them know what happened after they authorized the funding or passed the legislation. And they deserve to know that.
Thanks, Kurt. Can we answer? I got one more question. Can you guys answer one in 30 seconds?
Well, we'll try.
How soon should programs start marketing their team or plan?
How soon should programs start the create the marketing team?
Yeah, it says how soon should programs start their marketing team or plan? I assume it's how soon should they start.
Oh, I'll give an answer. My answer is yesterday. So in other words, that should be as early as possible, because you know what? At your agency, whether or not you continue to do the intervention that you've been funded to do, your agency is going to continue existing. You're going to have other things to market, and you're going to want to have that team and that plan in place. A lot of the things that could be part of a marketing plan that would be good for your intervention will be good for all the other activities you do to serve young people. So sooner is better than later.
Thanks, Kurt. And I should let folks know that Kurt is actually on the TPP Grantee Exchange. So if you have other questions or want to continue the dialogue, you can start a discussion, and I'm sure Kurt will be willing to jump right in and answer some of those questions. So with that, anything final from Kurt or Monica?
Nope. Thanks so much, everyone.
I want to thank folks for joining us. It was a great presentation, really thorough, lots of good information, and we will work to get those slides up on the TPP Grantee Exchange next week, and look forward to a continued dialogue on the exchange.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may disconnect at this time.